Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 16, NASDAQ Futures down 60. So maybe we'll be down a little bit today. We'll see. Rest of the world was down pretty heavy yesterday, but we were not. A little bit. But nothing compared to the rallies of the last week after the election. So we got that going for us. We got Bitcoin on a tear. I'm not exactly sure what the connection there is, but somehow or another, the fake stocks are doing well. And I know when I do that, some people cringe because they own Bitcoin, but one does have to question what exactly you own with Bitcoin. But and my word would be you own nothing other than somebody's willingness to pay more tomorrow, which is always good until someday maybe it doesn't happen. But it probably not. Today we have the CPI, so that'll be interesting. But, I don't know that I believe it, so it's interesting to see what they come out with. I guess my question is, are we going to be able to... we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning.
I just wonder... Kevin, not knowing how exactly they do this, I mean, the simple stuff, I guess, we know, because our buddy Mike Murphy's mom used to, what did she do? She used to survey rice and noodles and stuff in the Cleveland area or something. I'm sure the people like Mike's mom do the job like they're supposed to, but I don't exactly know what you do with health care and housing prices. Do they ever catch up, or do they constantly stay behind? I would think somehow they would have to catch up, but then again, I'm grasping at straws here because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. They never really caught up with tuition, I don't think. And I don't know what the role of taxes and stuff are in there at all. I mean, it doesn't seem like they're ever going to catch up with this house insurance, does it? I mean, at some place you got to catch up, you would think. But you tell me. I don't know. What do you think?
I think we're totally screwed.
Oh.
What else do you need to know about the economy?
Well, remember the what was the commercial with the the two ducks are trying to do something? All of a sudden they're walking away, and the one duck goes, "We're screwed. We need a new agent," or something. I forget what commercial. Speaking of agents, I kind of went off on a rant a little bit yesterday regarding the NIL, and I'm going, you know what? Why don't we just go where we're going quickly and get it over with? Don't have to go to school. You go to school. You can want to go to school. Let's just you're going to get paid to play football or maybe basketball. We'll have some housing for you. By the way, the rent we give you is taxable. We're going to pay you to play football. If you feel like going to class, part of your payment can be tuition, but that's taxable as well because nobody else gets that. You don't have to go if you don't want to. You can flunk if you don't want to. Let's just get rid of the charade. We're not that far away. Let's just go there.
As Tallender wrote in his book, The 100-Yard Lie, many years ago.
Many years ago.
One of the suggestions was that you get tuition for every year you play football, but it's bankable. You can use it now. You can use it after your football playing days are done, which could be at the end of your college career. It could be 2 years into a brief pro career. It could be after 15 years of a pro career. But the idea being that, that would maintain the tide of college. Why don't they do that? Because the payroll is still not coming out of the college's pockets. Well, it's coming out of third-party pockets, and they really, really like themselves, their student-athletes who essentially play for free. and that they'll be charged from the rest of the university. They'll get a charge for the fully loaded cost of tuition, room, and board. But it is so, it, the marginal cost compared to the fully loaded cost is not even close. In most cases, it's near zero.
Well, I think
other than the food they consume, which is considerable.
Other than the, I think at some point, Kevin, though, the tax laws, unless our government decides that some people don't have to obey the laws, which they do all the time, the tax laws are going to straighten all that out, I think, and your workman's comp laws and things like that. I don't know if that divorced payment from employment model works too long, but maybe it will. I don't know. It could. I mean, whose employee are you?
Well, I mean, they are the school's employee, and that well, this is why I think this whole, you know, arm's length relationship that they allegedly maintain with the collectives is nonsense. And somebody is, when there is going to be a day when somebody says, I'm an employee of the university. If I have to put in a comp claim, or if I have to sue because of a long-term injury, long-term disability situation, they are going to sue the university. They are going to claim to be employees of the university, and it will. And I think it will win. I think this is we are just in a situation where we are doing a pass-through payroll to a third party, and it's just, you know, it. It's so obviously the case that that's all it is.
I don't, you know,
that it has to change.
Think about that, though, Kevin. In most cases, I think you're right, but this seems to be, for instance, my buddy that I have a little beverage with once in a while, dude from the South Side. He, one of his friend's son, just got a deal in high school. Now, you know, we're talking six figures. I'm guessing, and again, this is just an old grumpy dude talking, I'm guessing that whoever the foot company is, or the shoe company, I think it's a shoe company, but I'm not positive, but let's say it is. Let's say it's Nike, for instance. Now, Nike's not going to put, you know, Kevin O'Neill Jr.'s name on a pair of shoes and sell them and make any money. You don't know who the hell Kevin O'Neill Jr. is, right? So, what they're essentially doing.
The question is to see Kevin Jr. or O'Neill Jr.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think it appears to me what they're doing is they're buying the kid's future. And let's say it's Nike, and he's going to go, I don't even know if it's football or basketball. I think it might have been basketball, but I'm not sure. They're going to say, young Kevin, here's five Nike schools. It looks like this school needs a guard, and by the way, you're a guard or a forward, whatever the hell you are. We think you should go there, and by the way, we don't just think you should go there, that's where you're going. Now, and the kid goes to, it wouldn't be Notre Dame because they're not a Nike school, but say he goes to, who the hell's a Nike school? Oregon. It looks to me like the kid's an employee in Nike. I mean, they're telling him to go play football for Oregon, and they're paying him. I mean, and he goes out, and I mean, it's like playing for the, you know, for our team in Mount Greenwood. You know, you can come to work for our law firm. By the way, on a Sunday, you're playing softball with us because we need a left fielder. I mean, it's almost the same thing on a professional level, isn't it? I mean, in that case, the law firm, if we had a law firm, would be the employer. And if you force the guy to play softball and they get hurt out there, I bet you get sued. Or you have to pay for the guy's broken ankle, at least. Why is it that much different?
It isn't.
So on that level,
it isn't. And by the way, for the record, I'm neither a guard nor a forward. I have backup center skills in about a 6 foot body.
You have five fouls to give is all you ever had.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
I wasn't much better, but I could get up the. I could get to the hoop a little better than you, as I recall, but not much.
You know, I was basically a football player.
Doesn't matter. Basketball is a great game for conditioning, though, isn't it? I mean, it's.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, I mean, on certain levels, I'm going to say that the kid last year at Notre Dame, Hartman, was an employee of Under Armour, not at Notre Dame. He just was told to play at Notre Dame. Just saying.
Well, I don't know which came first, the Notre Dame or the Under Armour.
I think the Under Armour signed him first, but I mean, I might have been simultaneous. But either way, they're paying him, and they're saying you got to go play ball for these guys. It is no different than on the trading floor hiring some guy for your basketball team, only on a different level. But it's really, I mean, Notre Dame thinks it's their team, but is it really Under Armour's team? Whose is it? I think it's moving closer to being Under Armour's, isn't it? If they're buying you a quarterback every year.
Yeah.
Although I
haven't seen a whole lot of Under Armour stuff with Riley Leonard, so he may have a different one going.
You know, I think he might be Dick Sports. And I've never heard that. I think that's who is. I heard some big commercial with him and Dick Sports, but is Dick Sports that close to Notre Dame? I don't know.
Not necessarily. Do they do ads on the games?
I don't even think so, no. Wait, not that I saw.
Yeah, I'm surprised we don't have whatever that sub shop is that what's that Danny DeVito does, because they show about 18 of those ads every
game.
Yeah.
What about Beldo Brick? You know, all the new buildings are still using Beldon Brick.
Well, why not? It's the finest brick anywhere.
Well, you know the only place it's not Beldon Brick, and why that is.
Why is that?
Well, the only new building in the last like 25 years is not Beldon Brick in Notre Dame. I'm going to give you a clue. It's not on campus.
I don't know. Stadium?
No, it's not on campus.
Okay, well, you tell me. I'm not willing
to play guess again. The new golf place across the highway.
Because the new golf course?
The new golf clubhouse.
Yeah, it's not that new, by the way.
Well, but I was going to say, you know who's, why that is? Lou Holtz had a buddy in the brick business.
Oh, okay.
And demanded his buddy sell a brick to the place or something. Unreal, huh? Hey, we lost the Jerry Faust yesterday, huh?
Fuzzy's gone, yeah.
Where did he, you know, it's, for those that don't know, the Irish hired a high school coach, Jerry Faust, out of, was it Cincinnati Molar?
Yes.
Which was a big feeder into Notre Dame, back when a lot of these Catholic schools were feeders into Notre Dame. That's when you were a Catholic kid. I mean, Marist, my year, sent 8 or 9, maybe 10. How many, your year came from Loyola?
Well, me. Yeah, we had a few.
Look how many guys came from St. Viator.
A lot from Viators, yes. And, they had a whole bunch of feeder schools that they had. Moeller was one of them. And Moeller had, gave us Steve Niehaus. They gave us Dan Novikoff. They gave us Steve Sylvester. Some of those guys went on and were pretty good pros, too.
Well, Niehaus was a first-round pick.
Niehaus was the second pick in the draft after Leroy Selman.
Yeah, and he was one of these guys. He looked he looked like a little like Alex Karras, that kind of a build.
Yeah,
kind of just a kind of a bulky guy. But he was a pretty good pool player. I used to play pool with him down at Nicky's. And if you're observant, which, you know, I always try to have been, but some people tell me I'm clueless, but I'd like to be observant. You watch the guy walk around a pool table, he didn't even walk normally. He was so light on his feet. He was like Jackie Gleason walking around a pool table.
Oh, yeah. Do you ever see him play basketball?
Real good. He was real good.
Really good, and just incredible quickness. He'd post you up and spin right around you.
Yeah, people think that these guys are just like normal people. They're not. They're not. I mean, they're normal people, but the idea that, Joe Montana looks like he's just a regular guy. No. I was reading remember the guy, well, you were too young, Kevin. I'm sure you remember the name, Kenny Hubbs.
Sure.
And the Cubs, he was a rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year, really good player, got killed in a car accident, didn't he?
No, it was a plane crash.
Plane crash, okay.
Oh, and he was a Mormon dude. He was, to this day, they think he might be the best quarterback ever out of Utah. And he had a scholarship, basketball scholarship to Southern Cal and Notre Dame, and we decided to play baseball. I mean, these guys are not just regular dudes. I mean, it's so hard to explain that to people, Kevin, who haven't played a lot of ball. I remember in the OEX pit, I'd say, guys, I play basketball 4 nights a week. the best guy I've ever played against is nowhere near as good as the worst guy who's ever played in the NBA. Why don't you guys get that? But they don't. They don't. What can I tell you? I can play quarterback. Now if the Bears just, if they only called different plays, Kevin, they'd be winning.
Well, I don't know how far I'd go with that, Tom, but I would say that they have gone three quarterbacks in a row making the same mistake. And this is not me saying this. This is people who are professionals. Your Patrick Manley's, Kurt Warner's, people like that, that say that they just throw them into the deep end of the pool. Here's the whole damn offense. You run it. You're going to run it. And they do that rather than say, what does this guy do well? Let's do that, and then we can, piece by piece, we can add more as he's ready to absorb more. And I think that's just a terrible management approach in any business. And they've done it three times in a row. They did it to Trubisky. They did it to Justin Fields. And they keep, it's like they keep trying to make them something they're not, which they may need to do for the long term. But do you need to do it this week? And the answer is no. You want to get some success going under his belt. The Bears were at their best before the bye week. They were at their best when they went into a no-huddle offense. Why was that good? Well, two things. Number one is it cuts a whole lot of crap out of the plays you're going to run right off the bat. So it's simpler. And two is a no-huddle offense typically wants to get rid of the ball quickly, play with some tempo, which means your offensive line doesn't have to hold blocks for a long time.
No doubt about that.
That, to me, is how you properly adapt. And then since they went on the bye week and had a chance to evaluate everything they did, they just decided to scrap with the one thing that they did well.
But you see the difference. The only problem with that is when you get behind, all of a sudden that doesn't work to a certain extent. You see the difference between, I mean, why does Patrick Mahomes win every game in the fourth quarter? Because at the end of the game, his offensive line can hold people out, and he's got four people in the pattern, and the other guys can't, basically, right? In my opinion. I mean, he's better than the other quarterback, probably, but if you just change spots, change teams, you'd have the same result, I think. Kansas City would always come out on top. Not always, but most of the time. I mean, the announcers the other day were talking about, geez, they're getting Cole Kmet into the play. He's in every play. He's blocking. You finally let him go out for a pass is what you mean. And the guy.
Well, and Tom, I get exactly what you're saying, but I still think that it's important to simplify. When you've got young and inexperienced people, simplify, make it easier, and do what is the strengths are. Now, it is this like the big fix to the Bears? Of course not. Why? Because as it stands now, they're going to be changing coaches again. And so that's the way it's going to work. So this is just the first change because they're trying not to ruin their rookie quarterback in the meantime. But I think we're looking at a whole new set of coaches. And so this will also be the third time in a row that they've drafted a quarterback and then change coaches after 1 year with a former coach. I mean, what a dysfunctional organization.
Well, there's a lot to be said for Pittsburgh.
Dysfunctional not because they did it wrong once, but because they keep doing it wrong.
There was a time. Football gets this, there's like an ebb and flow in the way I guess it's the same way in politics and everything else. There's an ebb and flow to the thought process. We went to a period of time when the Bears in 85 were sort of the same way. Incredible defense and an offense that just was pretty good, but just didn't screw up, and you had good special teams, right? And then all of a sudden you did the same thing with the run of a Baltimore team when Ray Lewis was there. The quarterback, as long as he was pretty good, as long as he didn't throw interceptions or fumble the ball, you always won. And now it's... If you don't have the, if you your first thing you need is this elite quarterback It doesn't matter if he's playing with you and me. If he's elite, he'll make up the difference. And now people are finding out that that doesn't necessarily work. But you got to have somebody around the guy, right? So, I mean, you get sort of this ebb and flow on this. But I don't know. I mean, the Bears beat the Rams, and the Rams were injury destroyed that weekend. I don't know any team in – man, there might be a couple. I don't know any team in football that has three offensive linemen that are serviceable. Two don't play at all, and one gets hurt in the second quarter that team wins. It looks decent doing it. It even looks decent losing. Do you?
Mm-mm.
Especially when the other two offensive linemen probably would have trouble starting for a college. I mean, for some reason, I don't know why they – I mean, I actually like this kid, his quarterback. But for that particular team, Kevin, I don't know how you didn't – since there were a bunch of good quarterbacks available, why you didn't drop down in the draft three or four spots, get one of the other guys, maybe get another pick, and, oh, by the way, get a serious starting offensive lineman off that team. Because the team needed three people, not one. Right?
Yeah, and they got – well, they got – the extra wide receiver, which is fine. He's been actually pretty good.
Oh yeah, he's good
for the most part. So they, you know, there's a lot of talk about how they got him all the weapons, and they did, but they didn't get him anybody to block. And there are other ways that they could have done it. So if they really believe that Caleb Williams is the generational quarterback, then don't pass on him. Okay, I get that. I'm fine with them actually using the number one pick, especially because they had parlayed it. The other one into such a good haul the year before, so that part was good. But what they have coming up, what they have to do is they have to bolster the offensive line. So their own pick, which apparently is going to be pretty darn good, should get them a starting, you know, like a starting left tackle, and. Unless they want to go spend it in free agency and get a guy like Ronnie Stanley from Baltimore, who's up as an unrestricted free agent, you know, they could do something like that. But they can still draft an offensive lineman with that. And then they still have Carolina's second round pick, which is also going to be a very high pick in the second round, where you can still get really good offensive linemen. What they didn't do last year is they went and signed a bunch of free agent offensive linemen, but they were mostly backups on their team, on the teams where they were. They didn't, there's competent, you know, there's solid, maybe not all pro caliber, but solid offensive linemen to be had every single year in the free agent market. And you might have to overpay a little bit for them to get them, but you know, you can go get guys that will be okay for you. And instead, they got guys who are just not very good, hoping that they were just going to be depth pieces and maybe one of them would be a starter. And instead, you know, they've got backups who are now starters. And, you know, and when they had injuries, they just didn't have answers. And, you know, at this point, you know, Tevin Jenkins is really good, but he's been hurt as much as he's not been hurt, so they probably should not be counting on him, so that's another one they have to replace. They really need to stock up on guys who can block.
What was the guy, where's Matty Weber when we need him? What was the guy, who had to be at least 10, 15 years ago, Kevin, where they got a offensive lineman, essentially, I'll say off the scrap heap, but really somebody cut him near the end for salary cap purposes or something, and they got some guy, big African-American dude, was really good. I think he was a left guard. They got him. The other team thought he was washed up. He was coming off an injury or something. He ended up playing here kind of on the cheap for probably 4 years at damn near all-pro capability. We had a great career here for 3-4 years, and I think the Bears got the idea in their head that every year we're going to get a pearl falling off this hill of these guys cutting, and it happened once. The guy they picked up, was it 2 years ago? He's been terrible, the guard, right?
Yeah, Nate Davis.
Yeah,
he's been awful, and they picked him up, and he was really good at Tennessee, and he's been a complete dog.
Hey, doesn't he not even inch up for the mini camps or anything? He was just
fine. Yeah, he misses as much as he makes. And when he's in there, it's like you know, it's like, well, I got, you know, most athletes don't do this. You know, you always have that occasional guy who gets his money, his free agent money, and then says, okay, I don't need to work at it anymore. I'm set. Most professional athletes are so competitive that they don't slack off when they get paid.
Well, plus it's a club.
This looks like a case of a guy who did.
I mean, once you get on a team, it's a club. I mean, you don't want to mess with you don't want to disappoint your teammates. Most people don't.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if the guy's completely ostracized now. They probably, you know, except for the fact that they just don't have any offensive linemen, they probably need to just cut them loose and take their medicine, take their cat medicine, because I can't believe that he is helping the atmosphere on the team.
What do you think is going to happen with Dallas? The trade deadline's over, right?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good question.
It was either last week. I think it might have been last week.
Might have been.
I was going to say, well, the Bears are so deep in a hole they can't do anything now, but I wonder who's going to pile off.
Well, except that if there were, November 5th, it's done. So at the trade deadline, if they could have gotten somebody who has some years left as an offensive lineman, you know, I don't know how much you want to pay for that, considering that you still should be able to draft some good linemen. The Bears are not totally devoid of talent. They're just devoid of talent on the offensive line.
Right.
So, you know, the roster is fixable. The question is the coaching staff fixable? And is their ability to hire a coach fixable? Inability to hire a coach.
It makes you
fixable.
Wonder that they've drafted, six or seven franchise quarterbacks in the last 15 years or something. Not one of them panned out. The coach, it kind of bugs me a little bit when people say, this is stuff you really can't, everybody thinks they're an expert sort of on TV, unless you know what you're looking at. TV's job is to follow the ball, right? You really can't see how people are playing people till you're at the game. I'm not advising people to pay the money to go to a game, but if you go to the game and you see all of a sudden, okay, the team runs twice, maybe they get 4 or 5 yards on first down, maybe they get 3 on second down, and all of a sudden if you're going to run again, all of a sudden the linebackers take 3 steps toward the scrimmage, your 2 safeties move up, and I dare you to run. I mean, you cannot be one-dimensional at any level of sport, especially at a professional football level. If you can't throw, you're not going to be able to run. I'm sorry. It may have been a couple teams in history that could do that, the Packers or somebody, but not very many. I mean, you can. There's no way, if they think you're not going to throw deep, and all you're going to do that you can run against a team like that. You're going to get a play here and there. If you got a Gale Sayers or somebody, you might break one. But by and large, you could watch the Bears. When I was a kid, I used to go. I remember Jim Verbeck. We used to go to the game, and Jimmy was a good football player. He'd sit there and go, "This one's a pass. This one's a." You could tell the other team knew exactly what the Bears were doing every time. If all the linebackers backed up, he goes, "Watch, it's a pass." If they walk up, watch, it's a run. It always was. I mean, somehow or another, the Bears in offense have never been together, have they? Even though they've had some pretty spectacular people on offense, it was always they were the caddy for the defense. That's the team, right? That's the mentality.
Well, yeah, it's the identity, which is, you know, it's okay to have an identity, but no, you first of all, yeah, you're right. You have to be versatile. In sports, you have to be versatile. But the other piece of it is you can't be bad anywhere. You know, weak links get exploited, period. They just do. So you can't. You can't have weak links that are easy to exploit. Same thing. Pick any sport. You know, you have to at least be solid at every spot. You don't have to be great everywhere, but you have to have your core competency everywhere. And this isn't that true in just about any organization that we do? I mean, it just is, and I don't. They aren't.
If you got a manufacturing company that has the best manufacturing, you can't deliver to anybody, or you can't sell. What are you doing exactly?
Yeah, you don't sell well, or you aren't good at customer service, or you can pick all kinds of things that that would fit that mold. But that's a good example.
It'll be interesting to see, because we wonder why the Bears keep running through coaches and quarterbacks. I mean, something's wrong. But Green Bay's had what? If this kid has a 10-year career, I'm not predicting one way or the other, the Packers will have had what? Three quarterbacks over 30 years?
Or 35, maybe 40.
Maybe 40. I mean, compare that to the Bears, where we're out running like an eighth number one pick in the last 20. That's a lot.
And look at how they've ruined some of them. You know, that's the part of it. You know, even Jay Cutler, who was very talented and not the world's cuddliest guy, you know, not the world's most lovable guy or anything like that. But damn, the guy spent, you know, play after play looking at the sky because he had just been knocked to the ground again. They traded two first-round draft picks to get him. Plus a backup quarterback, and so, you know, they spent a whole lot to go get him, only to say, we're not going to get you anybody who can block.
Well, and people look at the...
What is wrong with that thinking?
Well, people look at the 85 team, the Super Bowl team, and they go, all right, you know, they had this great defense. Well, they had people, you know, what was the song, a man he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest? They had two number one picks on the O-line. Keith Van Horn and Jimbo Colbert, who's a Hall of Famer, by the way. And by the way, you stole Tommy Thayer on the third round when he probably could have been a second rounder easy, and went to the other league that disbanded after a year. So
I think they were surprised after they drafted him that he went to the other league, because that's the kind of things the Bears do.
But he came back. And, oh, by the way, he ended up, I think there's a record that'll never be broken. Doesn't Tommy Thayer hold the record of more college or professional games played in like a 15-month period or something?
He might, yeah, because he started on two teams in less than a year.
Well, he played a whole year with Notre Dame. Then the Wranglers it was a spring sport for that league. So he played, what, 9 or 10 games for them. Then he went to the Bears and played a whole season for the Bears. And I don't think he missed a game.
Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic. The only guy there who wasn't, you know, obviously, Bortz, they drafted as he was a defensive lineman, and they converted him.
And he was pretty good.
They knew he was a good football player when they got him. And Hilgenberg was the one guy. I think he was an undrafted free agent. So, they got lucky with him. But the rest of it was very intentional. Jim Finks was intentional about building his offensive line.
And he'd done it before. I mean, he grabbed Dennis Lick, but then he got the knee injury. So that, and he had to replace him with Keith Van Horn. And Keith was a very solid right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Jimbo.
Really, he was part of like the best offensive line I've ever seen in college at Southern California.
Yeah,
they had Van Horn. They had Munoz. They had they had a guard. Guard that played for Miami for like 12 years. They had Mosbar, who played for the was a starter for the Raiders for a lot of years when they were good. And I'm leaving somebody out. I know I am. The center. What the hell was that guy? Who played for the Chiefs for years?
Really?
And, you know, all five guys had long NFL careers, and some were. You know, I mean, heck. Munoz is a Hall of Famer, and
he was a first balloter, I think, for sure.
And Fisher, I think, was the guy's name, was an All-Pro center for the Dolphins. And, you know, gee, I wonder why their guys racked up so many yards and so many Heisman trophies.
Kevin, let's switch to the economy here. We got some time. When you talk about things kind of going on all cylinders, when is it going to become? If it ever does, I mean, it's never hard to get your hands around just about anything the government does, but there's all kinds of, you know, murmurs in the mist, as they say, regarding what the new administration's going to do and not do. But the degree, just pick one of them. I mean, how does the tariff thing, I mean, I was reading yesterday that there's the lobbyists have never been busier making sure that, well, if anything is getting written, that their industry is How does anybody really know here whether you're on the ass end of this or the front end, if it's going to help you or hurt you when you don't even know? And right now, I'm not so sure whatever industry you're in, you've got to make some kind of a pause on your capital investment, one would think, unless you know you're already being one of the, not favored, but at least not, I'm not going to say favored, but one of the groups that's not going to get torpedoed. I mean,
yeah, the question is, do you know your fate? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, there's a lot of balls.
Tom, it's totally going to depend on what gets implemented, though.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, we start by, with the saber rattling, and then we'll see.
Well, that's right. But, I mean, how does anybody know where that's going to land? I mean, is the question. I mean, what's the time frame on it? I mean, we're talking about somebody who's only got 4 years. I mean, he might have somebody behind him, but he might not. You know, I mean, but you know what? So, if there are going to be the tariff stuff, what would be your date? Not yours, but what do you think the right date would be? When does it have to be done? I mean, it can't be 2 years from now, and the guy's only got 2 years left. It has to be pretty soon if it's going to happen, don't you think?
Oh, they everything I am reading is that they are totally focused on hitting the ground running. Hell, they're talking about getting things done like recess appointments before they can go through the confirmation process. They really want to. This is, and it's well planned. They aren't making it up now. I mean, this has been, everybody says Trump's been running for the last 4 years since he lost. He's also been planning, and vetting people and all kinds of things, because he's trying not to make the same hiring mistakes that he did before. And you see it in the choices, in that they aren't the people from the list of usual suspects. Now we'll see how it works out, but but as an example, he just announced Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense. Well, I look at that and say, holy crap! I mean, he's been a Fox News guy, and I know he's ex-military and had a military career, but I'm sitting here thinking, well, on the one hand, that's interesting because. Because it's somebody from outside who, has very publicly stated what he believes has to happen with the military and is going to have an agenda to implement. But on the other hand, I look at that and say, he doesn't have the administrative experience. I wonder how this is all going to fly with all these generals and admirals who are career people, and are, how are they going to feel about taking direction from him. That should be interesting to watch. Been through that myself, when you go in from the outside and everybody says, who the hell is this guy and why should I listen to him? So, if he were to call me up and ask for advice, I'm sure I could give him some. But I look at an appointment like that and say, damn, he's really trying to shake things up.
Well, remember the first... first show in the Star Trek episode, right? When they picked up Riker, the first officer, and he got on board, and they had the saucer section was separated from the other section, and the first thing he did when Picard just met him, and none of the other people had any respect or reputation of Riker whatsoever, and he goes, I want you to dock this manually. And everybody just looked at him like, who the hell can dock this manually? Or who's done it in the last 30 years? And he pulled it off, and everybody looked at him and goes, he's our guy.
Okay.
I mean, there's stuff, there's ways to do this. Now, my big concern is if...
Well, this is either going to be like a wonderful long-term management lesson or a complete debacle. I don't know which.
And the first guy... The names that he's picking, I think, look pretty good to me. Now, if the first time somebody disagrees with him, are they fired? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I don't think that was the... First of all, I don't agree with you that that's the way it went all the time.
We weren't there. We don't know, but people seem to disappear.
I think his bigger problem, because Trump doesn't seem to mind disagreement as much as he minds, let's just say disloyalty, that all those people who were leaking... And he had a real habit of getting impressed. Now, I think his chief of staff, Susie, Wise. Oh God, what's her name? I think she's a pretty good noble, no BS type of gatekeeper for him, and I think she sees her job as keeping the crazies away from him. So that can be valuable, and she is one of those people that has, you know, the reputation to keep Trump in line. And just one story that I saw about it is that I think it was the New York rally, and he started to veer off course into something where they didn't want to be, and where he was just probably going to cause some problems for himself. And she just walked over, got in his eyesight, glared at him. He looked at her, and he stopped.
Well, someday, maybe in the next life, Kevin, I'd like to figure out what happened between, I think one of the most talented people had to be ever in a cabinet. Now, whether he was good at what he was doing, I have no idea. One of the most talented people, and his wife said when he got the job, I remember reading that this is the job, without him knowing it, it's the job he's been preparing for his whole life, was Tillerson. I mean, that guy knew more about worldwide stuff as being the head of Exxon than anybody you could ever imagine. And what do you suppose the big problem was there?
Well, I don't know in this case. I will tell you that, you have to be about the leader's agenda. So whether it's running a department in a business, whether it's the CEO in a business, whatever it is, you really only have two choices. You embrace the agenda and you implement it, or alternatively, you quit. You don't have a choice to say, I'm ignoring that stuff, I'm doing my own agenda.
I'm going to think that this time through, and I hope Trump doesn't do that. The first time it seemed to me that he changed the agenda a lot, to where I'd sit down with you and say, you're right, this is the way we're going to go, and 6 months later go, we're going a whole different direction.
And yeah, he may have. I think about that, Tom, but whether he was consistent in it or not, I do think in term number one there was a fair amount of making it up as they went along. I would also say, just from somebody I know here who was very involved in politics. In fact, he's a local congressman now, but he was involved in Jackie Walorski's campaign when she got first elected, and very tapped into Indiana politics. And he had told me a couple of weeks before the 2016 election that nobody expected to win, and then just in the last month they started seeing shifts in the polls, and so Pence's people, because he was a VP candidate, were scrambling around and saying, oh crap, we have to build a team
we
might actually win this thing, because they really weren't working on that, which may have been how the whole damn thing went.
Well, it had to be like that for Clinton. He never expected to win.
Oh, yeah.
But early on, he didn't.
He did have enough lead time, and he had his people in place. And it's the other thing you got to remember. Trump didn't have his Washington team. He wound up having to rely on advice from people like, Reince Priebus, who had been the Republican national chair. Some of the Washington insiders, and they kind of got their people in there. And I think the mission here is he may be promoting like an Elise Stefanik or, some of those people, but he's promoting people who will work his agenda. Now, we'll see how it plays out. But they will have a pretty well-aligned group this time through. It looks like it anyway.
Well, I would think it certainly looks better. Way better.
You can say better, you can say not better. That you had your Tillersons, you had lots of people like that who were really good. Christy Noem, interesting. I always liked her as a governor. She had that whole thing with killing the dog that kind of did anything.
That's a tough vote with the dog lovers.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. but this is an appointed position. So, you know, there's some interesting people in there. How this is going to work out as a team, I don't know. I don't really have an opinion yet. I got to see what the whole picture looks like.
Well, but some people have
But getting your team together, and look, you inherit some of them.
Yep.
You know, you inherit people. You want to make it work with the ones you inherit. You know, and I'm just speaking more generically. Politically, you can probably just clean house and get away with it. But you know, you go in and take over a department or something. I don't want to go in and fire everybody. What I want to do is go in, figure out the strengths, figure out create kind of a vision of where we're going, and then try to implement with the people I have. And then if people refuse to get on board, then okay, then we'll start dealing with that.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Kevin. I've heard a lot of people on the right giving the person all kinds of grief on the FEMA side about running out of money or something, and you'll hear people say, well, gee, you got it, but I think we try and be a little more incisive on the show by asking guys like Mike Murphy and Lou Michaels, okay, you have a certain amount of stuff set aside for missiles every year, and you're buying 50. By the way, you just shot off 100. Where does the dough come from? I use the term slush fund. Is there some place that somebody can just say, okay, we need to triple our order this year? Does that have to go back to Congress, not back to Congress? Well, I have to believe.
Well, they routinely go to Congress for things like shifting money.
Yeah.
So they say, well, we have plenty of budget here. We're out of money here. We need to shift some budget. And they go back for that all the time, and it generally gets approved.
Okay, but
when you have Mayorkas up there saying we're out of money, first of all, he wasn't. He wasn't out of money for the disaster relief, but they will be, and after they get done with these two, they will be out of money, and they will have to ship some funds or get some more funding of some sort.
Well, that's sort of my. That's why I'm trying always to find out from Mike and Lou how exactly it works. I mean, there's got to be a, quote, FEMA budget. There's got to be some money that's someplace somewhere that is apportioned. Do they even use separate bank? I mean, I'm trying to find the detail, because the devil is always in the detail, at least when money's involved. That's as long as I've been alive, that's the way it's been. So the money's someplace. So you get Hurricane George, wrecks a place. You send a whole lot of people down there. There's money, there's stuff going for flood. I mean, I don't know what pot all this stuff comes out of. That's where my curiosity is. So all of a sudden you get two more hurricanes, and finally your slush fund, your pot, all the places you can transfer from, for somebody to say, guess what, we better find some more funds here, because if I write a check tomorrow from where I'm supposed to be writing it, it's going to bounce. That's not a political stupid statement to me. It's just the way it is. Now, people take it one way or the other, and I don't know. Are they like the Fed, where they can just write a check, and when it shows up in the bank account, Congress goes, wow, we're not going to let that one bounce. We'll cash it. I'm curious as to how it all works.
I don't think they can write the check until Congress does it. But, Tom, if you would like, I'd be happy to get you signed up for Ivy Tech's federal budgeting course that's part of our supply chain logistics, or Department of Defense logistics curriculum.
Budgeting, I can understand. How many pots, where the money actually comes out of, I'm incredibly curious on.
Yeah, well, that's and then the second part you can take is the federal the next course in the federal procurement process.
Okay, well, how many bank accounts? How is this money separated out? When, where does it go?
Oh, there are. It isn't bank accounts. It's general ledger accounts.
All right. So if I decide I'm gonna build a bridge, and the bridge is budgeted at $10 million. And of course, you get the contractor who greased somebody, and it's really $15 million. I don't think I can just write the check for 15 and have it clear to you. Are you there?
No. But that isn't how it works. Which, you know, if you go rogue and write a check without authorization,
I'm saying how does that work? How does somebody just say, oh, how does somebody say we budgeted for 3 hurricanes, we got 5? Don't worry about it. Here's the dough. I mean, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, well, there's only 2 ways. You either go to Congress and you get an emergency appropriation, which then is as it's typically comes out of nowhere, just like all the other government spending.
Yeah.
Or you go and you get something shifted into a different account.
Now, who can do that?
Or from a different account. So, and that then just becomes, okay, we approve of you to take money out of, border security, and move it over to FEMA. That's the kind of thing that you would do, but you have to get approval to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean that's
part of the business of Congress that we don't really hear about on a day in.
I know you're right that it gets shifted, but let's pick a place. Let's pick LaGrange. You're redoing a bridge in LaGrange somewhere. I don't think you have a bridge there. By the way, you're redoing the railroad station. Well, these are 2 separate bills, one would think, or maybe not. There's $1 million overrun on the bridge. Somebody just goes, all right, you don't start the railroad station for a year. I mean, who gets to do that? I guess.
Well, yeah. Again, if that's federal money, if you're relying on federal money, yes, you go back to Congress and you say, we want to shut down, we want to hold on this project, and we want to move those funds over to the bridge.
I think that the Congress I'm seeing, no matter who seems to be in charge, looks like about 3 or 4 massive bills a year. They're not like Illinois where they do bills every day because there's one bill for one purpose. I don't think they go back.
They try to do the omnibus. They try to lay it all out in there, which is stupid. They should actually be running a whole bunch of bills for each different department.
Yeah, I would agree.
And so on. They really should. But once they do, then you're kind of locked in. I mean, those line items are specified in the bill. It's not like here. HHS, you get this much money.
Well, that's my question that I'm having trouble getting out.
That's why the bills are thousands of pages. If they were just giving departments big budgets and saying you figure it out how you want to allocate it, then the bill would be 15 pages.
Well, that's a question I guess we're not going to answer, but because we can't, is on page 582. There's a bridge that was $10 million. It's now 15. Where does the 5 come from, and who gets to say it comes from somewhere? I mean, is that now in the executive branch or back to...
No, that'll go back to Congress.
Congress approved
the expenditures as they are. If you've got to change them, you have to go back to Congress. And this is, like I said, this is the stuff that they do in Congress. They vote on stuff every day. And this is the kind of crap that goes in there that, they have to consider and make moves. Now, it's going to go to committee. Committee will either make a recommendation or not, and pretty much gets voted on based on the committee recommendation. And they don't really fight over that kind of stuff very much. They may criticize a lot of the overruns, but they really don't say, oh, sorry, I know the bridge is half built, but, tough luck. Get out your chicken wire because, that's what you have for the rest of it.
I would love to those guys get down to that. I don't see how you do that we started by both saying the bills are way too long. They could come back with 500 different things in there. Who the hell's going to go through all that? The burn interchange.
This is why I do think you should have to certify that you've read the whole damn thing before you vote on it, and then maybe we would get a little bit better writing of the bills. Hey, I have to go. All Russell's right. On, so I'm going to turn you over to Russell and listen while I'm driving over to campus.
All right. Drive safe, bud. SP Futures down 12, NASDAQ Futures down 62. You want to do a real quick break, Andrew, or you want to go right to Russell?
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 64. I'm going to say that maybe in my political life here, I don't think the words of that song, Buffalo Springfield, has to be, 1967, have ever rang truer. What do you think, Russell? What's happening? What's happening here? No, it's not exactly clear, is it?
Well, no, I think everybody spoke, and we're all very happy with, the majority of people are kind of happy with, we're going to change directions here. And I don't think they have much problem with that. Hey, is my daughter on?
Not that I know of. I don't do
She's
that.
She's supposed to be. I'm getting ready to walk into a speech. So let me text her.
All right.
I texted you a couple days ago. I said I got this thing I got to do this morning, but for IU.
I never got.
It didn't start for about 10 minutes. So I wanted Maggie to come on and. Her election night experience was absolutely fascinating.
Was she at the big party?
No, she wasn't at a big party, dude. She was working for Associated Press, taking all the numbers that got sent out to the networks. But you'll get a big, and it's not just because I've got this thing I'm supposed to do today. I also thought that if I were gonna be on for the full hour, I'd have had her on as well because. Her election night, she was as fired up as her mom and I were when the Sox won the World Series. She just thought it was the coolest experience of her life.
It wasn't like 1959 where they ran all the air raid sirens and everybody thought we were being attacked by Russia.
Only the Cub fans?
No, that was the Sox. Mayor Daley did it for the Sox.
But only the Cub fans thought we were being attacked by Russia. The Sox fans knew what was up.
I get those are back. Only
the north side was scared.
That was back in the day when both teams struggled to get a million people. It was a whole different world.
Oh yeah.
The Cubs only played in the daytime.
My father-in-law said the only time he had ever been to a Cubs game in his life was when the Cub Scouts took him.
Well, I used to go
in the summertime.
Well, I was from the south side, and all my Cub Scout and stuff. We always went to the Sox games. And we'd get the bus and get it. And I probably went like three times, and all three times were rain out. So you were there and sat there for like 3 hours. I got back on the bus and came back. It was pretty brutal. Plus, we had like the worst seats in the place. But it didn't matter. It was not a game. But
No. You're at the game.
Yeah, you're at the game. But they had those big old CTA buses that held like a gazillion people, the flexible coach things you only see in old movies now. And you're bouncing your way all the Sox Park. Like, God, what possessed me to do this? But... But the Cubs, the upper deck was never open during the week. You know, that was bizarre.
Oh, really? Oh, no. I didn't grow up in Chicago, so really, I was not aware of that.
No, they only did day games. The upper deck was not open. As a matter of fact, the only time I bought the first movement toward that were the 305 games. When I first came to the trading floor, they had a big party over in the Berghoff basement to sell people 305 game tickets. So I bought 305 game seats, and my buddy Big Don had weekend and holiday and opening day because he was on the upper deck. He was first row right there, the seats we ended up with. But he only had them for weekends and holidays because they were closed the rest of the time. So then they ended up saying, okay, it was one of the things Dallas Green did when he came in. He said, we're going to have the upper deck seats open all the time. So there were no more 305 or weekend and holidays, so we kind of merged and bought the whole season because they actually were going to be open upstairs. I mean, and Thursday was Ladies' Day. Women all got in for free. And they still only had 6,000-7,000 people there. The matter of fact, one.
They should continue to do that.
There is no grandstand anymore. There's no general admission.
I know. No, just let the ladies come for free.
Yeah, where are you going to put them? All the seats are supposedly... Well, I guess you could put them in assigned seats. But those days, you got a grandstand seat. You got there early. You were right behind the boxes if you got there early enough. We'd get our grandstand seat. We'd better watching batting practice. We're in the first row of the grandstand. We'd take the bus from the south side, leave at like 9 in the morning. Take like 2 hours of the bus to get up there.
That's an all-day thing.
Well, my mom wouldn't have cared if we got on the L. But all the other moms, the L was in, a different neighborhood. So we don't want you taking the L, but you can take the Western bus. But, God, you know how far it is from the Western bus from 103rd Street to Addison? You had a switch.
Yes, I do. I mean, that's an all day walk if you're lucky.
Yeah, and Addison was, I think Addison was the electric cars, the electric buses. Mm-hmm. Or somewhere along the line was electric. Oh, we took Kedzie once, and Kedzie was the electric, the trolleys. That was scary.
How old are you?
I just remember. The difference, Russell, is when I was growing up, my mother and most people, you were supposed to be a creature of your environment. If you were 12 years old, you got on a bus and went somewhere. We went to Cub games with four of us. And we were 12. Do you imagine anybody letting their kid at 12 go from the south side?
I'm gonna take a real quick segue on what you just said, because what I'm doing right now is I'm traveling around Indiana, and I'm participating in, like, I talk about the financial market, somebody talks about the U.S. economy, but we also have people that talk about the state and the local economy. And last night I had a dinner with a lot of business leaders in Southern Indiana, and they basically said that kids today are just so you basically have to retrain them, and none of them are self-sufficient. And I think part of it's because they didn't have the freedom that we did when we were kids. You didn't go out and make it. You didn't go off on your own for 3 or 4 hours. You don't go off on your own for 3 or 4 hours now and adventure around whatever your environment is, as you put it.
When I'd pile in for dinner, she'd go, "How was the game? Good? Everybody have a good time? Yes? Anybody cause any trouble? Nope. All right, here's dinner." Like, okay then.
Anybody get arrested?
No, everything's fine. So, it was but you
I mean, they were blaming COVID because they're talking about, the kids that are that maybe didn't have a couple of years of socialization that would have helped them. But I think there's more to it than that. I think part of it's, of course, I'm a boy, and dads will have a little bit different attitude about daughters, but I sure as heck wouldn't let my daughters do some of the things my parents let me do. Hell, when I was 12, I was a bat boy for a AA baseball team, and I went on road trips.
Yeah, well, I'm saying you're supposed to be somewhat responsible at age 12. I went to a graduation party years ago, and it was all these kids, all these kids that were going to like Parker and those kinds of places. What's the other one? The other high-end school. And these are kids that their mother would not allow them to get on the bus for fear, they might run into the wrong group of people. And yet they were going to go away to college like 2,000 miles away. And they couldn't.
I know. I mean
that's too big of a jump.
Yeah, my wife went to a boarding school, and her parents wouldn't let her take the train. She went to La Lamira there in northern Indiana. And there was a way that you could take a train on Sunday from Chicago to get to school. And her parents wouldn't let her do that because people were drinking and smoking on the train. And then, all of a sudden she's going to school in Boston and taking the T to work on her own. That's a big old flip, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I look at, my dad was, by the time he came back from wherever year he was, from the South Pacific, I mean, he was probably, 26, 27, something like that. I mean him at age 27, I mean, I probably was nowhere near that mature till I was 35 and seen what he saw. And I'm thinking the generation after me, and some of the people now, you wonder if they ever get there. I mean, some of these guys don't look like they can ever do anything. I mean,
It's amazing that adults really, you know, you don't need a license to be considered an adult. You just, it's just based on your age.
Well, yeah. So
you know what I mean? So no, I know exactly what you're. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. So adulting's not as easy, and it's funny. They were also talking about how a lot of adults don't know how to adult, and someone from a charity that builds homes for the unhoused, as they put it. They had done 10 houses, and three of them a year later were a complete wreck because the people did not know how to take care of the house.
Well, yeah,
you know, they didn't grow up in a house. They didn't, you know, they didn't know that, you know, you change the filter and the heater. You know, that there's just basic maintenance to a house like you have on a car.
Well, one of my original producer, he kind of moved into our building, and he goes, Chief, just one thing. He goes, he came from a broken marriage, and then his mother married, that ended up doing real well, and mother's a terrific lady, and so is his stepfather. And he goes, just understand, everything a guy is supposed to be able to do at my age, I have no idea. So if you want me to grab a screwdriver, you got to show me how to use it. It was that bad. And he ended up doing, he's doing fine, you know, and got two kids. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy, but he learned, but he learned late. But it's one of those things. I'm curious to figure out the question I want to ask her is, how come there's still like 13 house races that are unresolved?
Maggie, why are there 13 house races that are unresolved? And aren't most of them in California? Which,
no, they're all over the place. Alaska, Maine.
Yeah, I know.
How you must have a count of the presidential stuff there, unless they're all that close. Something's weird.
Maggie?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you go. Yeah.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Does that happen every? I guess my question is: does that happen every time, or is this unusual if that happened? It's now.
No, this happens every time. I'm looking at the numbers right now, and yeah, like 179% reporting, 70% reporting in California. There's just an ability for like the opponent who is currently losing to like overtake. So it's just too close to call.
Well, I guess a week later, where's the other 30% going to pop out of the ground?
No, they're still counting, because a lot of time maybe it's like a lot of absentee ballots still have to count. Like something went wrong with their voting machines. Like there's just a lot of uncertainty within that.
Because the whole state of Alaska hasn't declared their person, right?
No, they declared. Yeah, no, they haven't declared their person yet. They're at 91% reporting, but so they're at 91% reporting. The lead, so it's against an incumbent, and the incumbent's currently losing by like 10,000 votes. But you have to remember, Alaska's pretty small. Alaska's pretty small, so there still is a chance for like overtaking, you know, like let's say if in a place like I don't know like the Alaska electoral map very well, but let's say in a place like Anchorage, which might be a little bit more democratic, perhaps like they had a problem with like one of their voting machines or something along those lines. That's why they'll hold it, because it's like, well, like obviously there's going to be like some more democratic. It's just very subjective.
Okay, because I'm looking at this kind of weirdo map, and I didn't blow it up here, but it looks like Maine has not figured out who their guy is, but that person's supposed to be Democratic. Alaska hasn't figured theirs out, but that person's supposed to be Republican. There's a district in Arizona that doesn't seem to be able to come up with a number. There's like three districts in the middle of California, maybe four or five that not on the coast, and like half and half. Half of them are pink and half of them are light blue, so... And then there's one part of Oregon, you would think. Yeah, and there's a section in Iowa. Iowa's all red. How could they not know the other spot's red? I mean, it's kind of weird.
You just gotta wait. Like, it's the best way to put it.
Well, the GOP needs two more people.
As long as it's statistically possible that one person can overtake the other, and they're still working through the hanging chads, etc. No, that's just what's going on.
Well, from my estimation here, it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4. It looks like the GOP is going to have 220.
Yeah.
and they need 218.
Yeah, most likely, unless if something else happens. You never know.
Well, the Dems are going to need 11 of the last 15. I don't think they get that.
Yeah, people are pretty confident in saying that it's going to be the majority. Like, the GOP is going to have the majority from across the board.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Which would seem like a huge license to do whatever you want, but the last, hell, in my lifetime, in the last 25 years, I think the people who had the majority across the board were they got more pushback from people in their own party than they ever did from the other side. I mean,
They don't have a super majority in the Senate, and also in the Senate you can filibuster.
Right, but what I'm saying is Obama wasn't able to do all that much. Bush didn't his first term, because I don't know if Bush knew what he wanted to do. But I'm saying it's not near the. You know, they make it seem like you can do whatever you want, but you really can't. Even in the House, because there's always somebody that doesn't like what you're doing in the House. Oh. You know, there's 435 people there that are, there's something to be said for being elected every 2 years. You can't do something that you're going to get thrown out of your district just for your party.
Yeah.
How much, maybe, let me ask you, because you're closer, maybe you can answer this question. If your dad gets elected as, you know, a rookie representative on either party, and he just shows up. What is he the first year? I mean, he goes to the orientation. They're going to put him on some bump committee, and they're going to expect him to vote their way every single time. When is he actually get a chance to do something? And I got to believe that your dad, being the way he is, even if it's if there's 15 bills in front of him, and all 15 he's supposed to vote yes for, even if he's a Republican. There's going to be a couple there that he's going to say, I can't vote for this thing. What is that? What happens if the guy votes against the party once a year? Is he ostracized or what? I mean, I would hate to go out there, screw up my life to be in the Congress, and I don't even get a chance to say what I believe. I'm just one of the, quote, team. Is that, seems weird to me. What's your feel for being there? I've never been there.
Well, it's kind of the idea of being a political party. Like, if you're going to register yourself with a political party and get around behalf of the political party, like, you're going to do what the political party says.
But nobody agrees with everything their party does. If you do, there's something wrong with you, I would think.
Well, yeah, that might be true, but, like, it's politics. Like,
you got to give and take.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to give and take. You know, Maggie wants a condo in D.C.
It's a joke.
Well, and honey, let me finish. And, you know, she's given a few alternatives on her living situation in D.C. by her parents next year. She can choose to contribute and live in a nicer place. So she's got to weigh the pros and cons behind that and maybe hold her nose a bit and say, well, I want to live in a nicer place, so I'm going to pay part of the rent or something along those lines. But she's going to end up having to do something she really doesn't want to do. If you want somebody to vote for your thing, for the new bridge in LaGrange, as you put during the first hour, you got to vote for their thing.
And yeah, it's quid pro quo.
And that's the kind of crap that has resulted in, you know, $2 trillion in deficits a year or something along those lines. And with that soapbox statement, I'm walking into the University Center at Indiana University Southeast to talk about the financial markets. And I will talk to you. Chief, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
And Maggie, right. I'm sure I'll talk to you three times today. And then finally, Chief, now that she's been on like this, she gets to go on the website, and I've got a bio for you.
That's fine with me.
All right. You guys have a great Wednesday.
Maggie, I'll give you a quick story. When I was on the CBOE board, a couple times a year, we would once a year we would have our board meeting in Washington, right? And we'd invite a bunch of people. And in the first couple of years, we stopped doing it for some reason. We'd have a reception up on Capitol Hill. Have you ever been to one of those? I'm sure you have.
I haven't been to a reception, but I've been up on Capitol Hill.
Well, I don't know if they let people do it anymore because everybody's so worried about security, but you could get a near the end, near one of the doors, right? There's like a big, you know, I'm sure there's a million big rooms in the Capitol, but there'd be a room, and the thing was set up with a couple of bars and, you know, a place where you can grab some hors d'oeuvres, and the staffers would come in, and these guys, Maggie, they were special. They would come in, they'd grab a drink, they wouldn't even really know who the hell you were, but they'd look at your name tag. They'd go, CBOE, you guys are great. They'd shake hands with like two people, grab like eight shrimp, and have a drink on the other end of the other bar and walk out the door, and wouldn't be there like 10 minutes. Shake like 10 hands, grab eight shrimp, two drinks, and they're gone. But I ran into one guy there, and he was a big, tall, good-looking guy. He was bigger than me. He must have been 6'5". And he was a redheaded dude out of Reading, Pennsylvania. And he was just what you were talking about. He was a Democratic guy in a very Republican district, right? But evidently he was the sheriff. And how he got elected sheriff, I got in because this guy was an idiot, so I ran against him and I won. Well, evidently there was some big crime that he solved, like, instantly. You know, he seemed like a really bright guy. He had pretty good law enforcement experience. I don't know if he was an MP or what, but anyway, so he goes, I get elected. And I show up, and thank God, I was actually pretty good terms with the guy who retired, the Republican guy. And like five of his seven staff people elected to stay for me because they liked me. He said, if they didn't stay, I wouldn't know what a can was. He said, so they put me on the two dunce committees, which is military something, not the double secret one where you get all the, you know, what the covert options are and so forth, just the military funding. And they put me on the agriculture committee, which doesn't do anything for every 5 years, right? Just so happened to be it was the year of Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the gays in the military, and it was a big flood in the Midwest. And he goes, you know, being a representative in Reading is not like Chicago. Chicago, nobody cares about their rep. You know, you worry about your mayor and whatever stuff. He goes, in Reading, every single thing I do is in the Reading paper. So I'm sitting there. They wanted me to vote against this, you know, gays in the military thing. And so Rastinkowski was the speaker, not the speaker, but he was the head of Ways and Means at the time. And he goes, hey, kid, we don't need your vote on this one. Vote no. It's okay. So please the people at home. So all that kind of, he was telling us all about this kind of dealing. What the best was, the Missouri River and the Mississippi were so, if you ever saw pictures of that flood, it had to be like 1992, I'm sure it was before Maggie, but you couldn't tell where the river was. It looked like some massive lake. We actually flew down to St. Louis. But evidently there's a Missouri River like in Vermont or New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys on the committee was from there, and if you didn't include his Missouri River, which had like no flood, in some of the funding you were giving for the Missouri River in Missouri, he wasn't going to vote for it. So they had to give him dough too for his Missouri River, which, you know, could have been 50 yards long in New Hampshire or something. You would have loved to have those conversations because, I mean, you understand this stuff better than I do. That's my whole experience with people in Congress. So for whatever that was worth for you, hope I didn't bore you to death with it. But interesting. I mean, there is this amazing quid pro quo, but it seems now everybody just lines up where each side votes. And I'd have a problem with that because, you know, I guess people think I'm a Democrat. Maybe I used to be. But it's not like I don't think there's ever a good Republican idea. I mean, would they just not want me there or what?
Well, look, I would say that's just how, like, politics work. It's a lot of, like, quid pro quo, like, oh, it's fun. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, as my father was saying, like, if you want funding for the bridge in LaGrange, you're going to have to go fund something else or be supportive of something else that you might not necessarily agree on. Because it's like, oh, well, if I... Like, it's a lot of, like, bargaining. I mean, most of these people have, like, what's it called? Experience, like, within the law. And a lot of, like, before you go to trial, like, every single time before you go to trial, like, you have to, like, try to settle out, like, a plea agreement, and it's only after you're not able to sell out like that sort of agreement that you go to trial. So every single trial before that kind of plea agreement, and most I would say, like, from, because I was in the DC Superior Court over the summer, I'd say that like maybe 75% of the cases either ended in a plea, like some sort of agreement, and 25% of the cases like went to trial. Like, probably like different numbers, but that's just
Was that federal court?
No, this is a city court.
Okay.
The DC Superior Court. So.
So it would be like county court here. We'd like Cook County Court, basically.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. But like, it's a little funky because it's technically like the only court like in the city. So like, if you like need something, so like, I ran into someone that was like, But, like, I knew who, like, was looking for, like, his, was looking to, like, change his wife's name. So, like, he was there on the same day I was, like, covering probably, like, a homicide or something like that. So, like, everything goes on, like, in this one building. It's crazy.
Well,
I miss it. I miss it, though. Like, I was on the metro yesterday because I was going to a reporting assignment in Southwest, and I saw, like, one of the prosecutors from, like, from, like, the D.C. Superior Court. I texted one of my old colleagues. I was like, oh my gosh, you would never guess who I just saw. So, yeah, I have good memories from it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, any kind of experience, especially if you talk to people, you never really forget it. You know, it's because everybody's got their own. Hey, Andrew, do we have Mr. Flanagan with us?
You do. Good morning, Peggy.
John, I'm sure you have some questions. We're a couple of minutes from break, but when we come back, well, let's talk before that. But I'd love to find out what the election night was like. I mean, our election night when I was in college was driving people around to get the numbers off the back of the machines. I'm sure it's a lot more sophisticated these days. So you were in party headquarters, or where were you?
I was sitting on my couch working remotely for the Associated Press.
Okay.
So I was taking phone calls from stringers and verifying the accuracy of the votes and putting them in their and putting that vote count in AP's system for AP to make predictions on. So the states that I did were, hold on, I wrote down because they were like really good states. I focused on presidential and Senate elections for Georgia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And it was definitely, it was super fun. Like, I don't know, like, look, because I was up from, I was doing election stuff from like 5 p.m. till 2:15 in the morning. But then I, what's it called? But then, like, I stayed up till like 3:30, just like watching everything go down. And I had to force myself to sleep because I had class at like 9:30. But it was just like it was so fascinating. Like, it was great.
Well, so the stringers, so. Jan, were you part of the group that went out and did all that stuff? We made the money for the dorm. We got paid, I don't know, $10 a precinct or something. But when the old voting machines, the numbers are right on the back of them. And maybe somebody and when I went voted, it's that little machine you put the ballot in and it just counts the paper. Now, is there numbers on the back of that thing that somebody can get them when the polls close? There must be, huh? Or is it just all reported electronically somewhere?
Well, when I worked at the polls here in Chicago in 2016 and 2018, everything was loaded onto it had a backup like a cartridge, you know, that was recording the electronic vote, and the counter vote then would be, you know, from the paper ballot counter would be downloaded, and those were sent electronically to downtown. I think directly to 69 West Washington. Board of Election Commissioners, and but all the other stuff, the paperwork and the equipment and everything, had to be taken back to the central station for auditing and, you know, checking back in, make sure it hadn't been compromised, that, you know, all the procedures were done as, you know, dictated in the instructions. So but the returns, you know, pretty much by 7:30 or 8 o'clock, they were downloaded to, you know, to whatever program they used. I can't remember the name of the thing. And then that went downtown. So they had our precincts returns before 8 o'clock.
Well, Maggie, you get...
And what they did with the Fed, you know...
I guess what my question on DeBody is here, when I shove my thing in there at 4:30, am I already counted, or is it, we have to wait till 6 o'clock when everybody in the precinct sends in one number?
Yeah, you have to wait till it closes.
They have to wait till it closes to start counting. And also, like, they don't count all the votes all at once. And they don't call all at once. The call all at once, it's super unusual. And, like, our system gets, like an error that, like, oh, well, like, heck, having all your votes in at once is, like, super unusual. Like, that's, like, a true thing. So, like, most polling places tend to call it, like, oh, we're 25% of the way done, or 75% of the way done, or 50% of the way done. Or if there's, like, some sort of, like, what's it called? Or if there's some sort of, like...
interim count or something?
Like, if there's some sort of, like, glitch or error, something like that's happening, so...
Well, but it's 6:01 in my precinct. Somebody knows how many was for Trump and how many was for Harris.
No, because it also depends, because if there's still other people in line, the polling place can't close. They have to wait for everyone to be done voting. So if you're standing up... So the polling place... closes at like 6, and you're standing on the back of the line at 5:59, and the wait time is 2 hours, like, you're going to be able to vote at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah. And the ballot counters that they used here would register the number of ballots that had been submitted, so you could see it all throughout the day as voting proceeded how many ballots had been put through this machine. That was the number that registered, but none of the vote tallies for the candidates were visible.
I could see on top of the machine. It would say I was like the 400th voter. It's right on the machine.
It's in there, but it has to be, you know, it's data that isn't read on any display on the equipment itself, and it has to be downloaded through the terminal that was used for electronic voting, which is what you do for all early voting now. You do it that way, but that had an internet connection, and all the ballot box stuff was fed into that thing, which, you know, transferred the data downtown. But all you knew was the number of ballots that had been cast through the counter. You didn't know
stuff was. So. Yeah, when I put mine in there, it went from 401 to 402.
Yep,
imagine that. we're going to go a quick break here. You guys hang around. More on this stuff. We'll figure out what's going on in the market. Looks like we have Tesla back up again. There's a relationship. I'm not. Anyway, we'll worry about that. We got SP futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 5. You know, the rest of the world turned negative yesterday. We did not, a little bit, but we'll see what happens today. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Powell. Andrew's on the board. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 26 as the CPI number came in. Looks like right where expected. I'm going to get that page up here in a second, and we will talk about it. While I'm doing that, individual stocks. Caterpillar is down $5. Caterpillar is one of the most volatile stocks lately, and I don't quite understand why, but it has been for the last few weeks. Tesla's up 10. All the rest of the 7 is not doing much. They're all kind of up yesterday, but they're not doing much today. As soon as my table consumer price index, this is a number that we every month basically jeer at on the show, because I think it's total BS what they have up there, but that would just be me. But we have, alright, we're going to get the markets here in a second. When you got like 15 things open on your computer, Andrew, it's very difficult to do this. The Russell is up 262. The Russell has really been up more than the rest of the stuff since the election, which is somewhat interesting. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports real quick, and then I'll get back and run through it, because I got an awful lot of stuff to run through.
Yeah, it sounds good. It is Wednesday, November 13th, and it is 7:37 here in Chicago. That's the thing with sports. As far as I can tell, there's not much from our favorite teams. All I got here is that the Suns played against the Jazz, and the Suns won 120 over 112. Over to weather, things are a little bit more interesting. We're currently at 45 degrees here in Chicago. Going to be a cloudy and breezy day, and it's probably going to be like that throughout the week. We're going to have a high of 53. Things are going to warm up a little bit throughout the rest of the week. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 47 degrees. They're going to have a nice and sunny day, and they're going to have a high of 79. Finally, for Chicago traffic, there are thankfully no major accidents to report. If you're coming in from the north or the west, expect some traffic on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower. If you're coming from the south side, things aren't as bad. But other than that, looks like that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Dow futures are down 90. Down. Well, this is all delayed here, so we'll just give the stuff that's up to date. The up to date stuff is the S&Ps are up 12, Nasdaq futures are up 31, and I guess I'll give Asia because they're up to date because they're closed. Nikkei down 654. That's 1.7. These guys have been cratered the last couple of days, and we have not. So we're the one that's hanging in there. Hang Seng down 23. Shanghai down up 17, and a lot of that has to do with foreign exchange. But the dollar has been amazingly strong. We're 106.5 against the euro. Euro was 111. I'm going to say 3 weeks ago. So that's a 4.5% move in a currency. That's a massive move. I mean, the one thing, or several things that you can never really mention to anybody, really, because people can't get your hands around the amount of currency transactions by the day dwarfs the stock market by like 50 times. So if all of a sudden you've got all kinds of euros and all of a sudden 3 weeks later they're worth 5% less than the dollar, that is a trade that, if you're on the wrong side of that one, is not so hot. I mean, it's not so hot at all. Right, we've got gold up $8, 26.14. It was on a 2-month low, but it's moving up a little bit today. Silver up 16 cents. Over in Europe, we get a European number here. Still got the DAX down 111. It's 0.6%. FTSE down 18.2. CAC around down 37.5. The one that's been all over the place. Crypto's down 870, but still 88,814. I don't know exactly what these guys think the administration is going to do for Bitcoin, but whatever it is, it's pretty damn bullish. All right, guys, what do you make of this CPI number? Does anybody look at any of these numbers anymore? May, does anybody even look at this stuff in Washington, or just sort of?
I'm really Googling CPI. Because I've never heard of this, because I'm only 20. Hold on. Are you talking about the Consumer Price Index?
Yeah, the CPI. It is. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, Table 2. Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers. That would be guys like Flanagan. He's an urban consumer, aren't you, Jen?
Boy, do I consume.
Yeah. So the headline number is adjusted is 0.2%. The unadjusted is actually 0.1%. X food and energy, I'll get down to there. Candy and chewing gum up 2.6% on the year. All kinds of stuff here that you can... energy, all items less food and energy was up 0.3, so a little hotter. Household furnishings and supplies. Let's see. Now, if you get your own apartment, Maggie, you laundry equipment, that's what you need, living room, kitchen, and dining room furniture. You need all this stuff.
Okay,
right?
I just want to say the condo thing was a joke, because I don't know if I'm allowed to say so much, but the father recently got like a deal with something, and I was like, oh, ha ha ha, like what's the budget on the condo next year, ha ha, like I was being completely sarcastic.
Right.
I already know where I'm living next year, so that was fine.
There you go. Well, it is we were talking yesterday, and who was on yesterday, Joe, was talking about how, it was Hal, about how somebody, he went to some college, and his grandfather, somebody bought a house for him to live in with a couple other guys. That'd be kind of nice if your old man bought you a house. When you some, I don't know if you want to buy a house in South Bend necessarily, but
back in those.
But here's a rent of shelter. They've got it up 4.9% on the year. I'm going to say that's a fabrication, although it is up 0.4% on the month. Rent of primary residence, which is the weird number, is only up 0.3%, and I've got to say that between insurance, between the housing prices and everything, I don't know about that, John. It's up about, in the last 3 or 4 years, I think the CPI's got it up like 18%. And what is it really, up 35 or something? 40?
It's got to be.
Yeah, it's incredible. So if you walk your way through this, Maggie, there's two things you... I'm not going to try and your young mind, I don't want to poison it here, but there's two ways you can sort of cheat in here. One is, if you go out and buy, there's two things. There's the price of rice, literally. Then there's a judgment that says how much of Maggie's basket, how much you buy of all, with all your money that you make, how much of that do you spend on rice? And that number is going to be, 0.01% or something, because if you buy one thing of rice a month, it's probably a lot. But as you go down the list there and you look at the things that are sort of egregious, for the last 25 years, they've had medical expenses at 6.5% of somebody's basket, yet it's 21% of the economy. So clearly there's a problem there. It can't be 21% of the economy and only 6% of somebody's basket, because somebody's paying for it. So when you if this is your first blush at this thing, you want to look at both of those things. There's a column that says the second column in the whole mess is relative importance, meaning what it is in your basket. And then a few years ago, they started doing stuff where if you like steak, and steak is up 20%, they're going to say poultry is only up 5%. We're going to adjust, saying Maggie going into the store is now going to have the brains to say, I'm not going to eat as much steak, I'm going to eat more poultry. So they actually then able to switch the steak from being 3% of your basket down to 2%. So there's all kinds of ways to, I won't say cheat, I'll say maneuver the CPI. So as you go through it, you know, seems to me like you've got a pretty inquisitive mind. Look what they're trying to tell me here, basically. Is that too much? So every one of these things is, there's somebody you should at least know of, Maggie, as you're walking your way through Washington. We had him on the show once, Professor Goodhart. He was at Oxford, I believe. And Goodhart's law is, whenever an index becomes a target, it ceases to be any good as an index, because people will manipulate the index. So kind of remember that line. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I know a lot about like healthcare costs, just because of like personal experiences, how insurance works and those sorts of things. So that, because I've had to switch a lot of my doctors to D.C. since moving here. So I know how all that works.
Yeah.
It's not very fun.
It's not very, and they actually have somebody dreamed up, what is it for the cost of medical insurance? It's actually down a chunk in the last year, because now they've decided, instead of actually calling up, you know, PTI or whoever you work for and say, gee, how much is your insurance for Maggie Rhodes? Oh, it's up 20% next year. We're not going to do that. We're gonna figure out how much money the insurance companies have made, and we're going to, based on that, if they had a down year, we're going to say the cost of insurance was actually down. Now, that's special, don't you think, Jen?
Well, I'll say.
Yeah, but that's how that one is done now. We figure out how much the insurance companies have made, and then we back into the amount of how much the insurance cost is. You know, I mean, who has the nerve to think up stuff like that and actually put it out there and not be like, you know, be water ballooned to death or something? You know, I mean, how can you? It's pretty. Health insurance was only up 6.8% on the last year, but the year before was actually down. Which is really so. All right, Maggie, so you're sitting. How come you didn't get to go to some big party? What are you doing sitting on your sofa the night of the election?
Well, because I was working remotely for AP.
All right. Can't you do that sitting there with all the goofballs running around?
No, because it's too loud.
Oh, all right.
I'm actually working.
Oh, all right.
Like, well, do you want to work at a party? No.
No.
No one does.
No. No, I agree with you on that. But so that's cool. So AP, how did they find you?
I applied for them. I just saw them on a job posting. And I had to, like, go through an application and submit all my application stuff. And then they accepted me. That's exactly what happened.
So for just one night?
No, I've done a few other primary elections.
Okay.
For them. This is not the first time I've done it.
All right. Well, that's cool. How many Maggies are there out there for AP?
I have no idea.
Like hundreds or 10 or...
Oh, you mean like number of people?
Yeah, how many people?
I think there's like 500 working on election night.
Wow.
Well,
was that a lot or not? I mean, I don't even know.
I don't know. I think it's a lot. A lot of people.
Well, Jan, you fire away. I'm sure you have a couple of questions that I haven't come up with.
Well, I was interested, Maggie, in what you make of the climate in Washington, you know, living there, going to school there. My read on Washington over the years has always been, it didn't matter who was in power from time to time, because this city always had the same kind of feel to it, and you couldn't like look around anywhere and get a read on, are the Republicans in power, are the Democrats in power, are we at war? It didn't register in sort of the buzz on the street, and that's a testament to the power of the administrative state. It just chugs along, and it doesn't matter who's in power. But do you see a kind of, or feel a kind of atmosphere in the air about what's been happening, what's about to happen, what are people talking about?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that, like, I go to college here, so, like, I'm mainly surrounded by, like, college students, and there were definitely, like, a lot of people that were, like, really upset, like, the day after the election. Like, I have a class with normally 30 people, and, like, only 10 people showed up. Like, it was insane. But then, like, yeah, like, I would, like, as I said, like, I was working, I was up till 3:30, but then I forced myself to sleep because I had class at 9:35. And like, I went to my class, I think, like, maybe 20 people were there out of, like, the 100, the 200-person lecture or something like that. And it's, like, I feel like, I don't want to sound rude, but I feel like a lot of people were not upholding their responsibilities, like, because they could say, oh my goodness, like, the results of this election, blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's worse than
that. At Georgetown, they were having students play with Legos to work off their tension or something.
I don't know. I'm not at Georgetown. I'm at George Washington, yep, which is the better school.
No. There's a shout over to the bow. I love it.
Yeah, no. Everyone's like that. But, yeah. But, no. GW's interesting. I think it's fine. It's a fine school for what I want to do. I think I said this before, but, like, when choosing a college, I really wanted to, like, pick a school where I could go off and sort of do my own thing. So that's why I picked GW, because I feel like I wasn't, like, necessarily tied down to, like, everything that's going on. But there's definitely, like, a lot of students that want to be tied down and try to be tied down.
Well, a lot of it
is the culture here is just super weird, and it's kind of exhausting to be around sometimes, but it's whatever.
Well, every college, I mean, when I was a little older than you, whenever I went somewhere, you know, another city, there was a college there, I always toured the place. And every one of them is so different in terms of atmosphere. I mean, it's scary. I mean, Notre Dame was almost like a military school where you showed up. South Bend wasn't much of a town. I mean, I found a bunch of saloons, but not many people did. But basically, there was nothing to do in South Bend. I mean,
I've been there so many times.
I mean, you lived at campus. It was like going to a military school. You went to school all day long. You know, I mean, you did some sports at night, and then you studied, and that was it. And you got there after Labor Day. You didn't have a break till Christmas. I mean, you were, and then you were out real early in May. I mean, it was you'd go to, like, a place like ASU, Arizona State. Everybody's on the 7-year plan. All the young ladies are working as waitresses or something in the spring, making more money than they're ever going to make if they get a real job. So they didn't care if they ever graduated. It's a whole different, and nobody lived on campus. Where Notre Dame, everybody did pretty much. I mean, you go to Michigan, there's hospitals, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. I mean, they're all, Ohio State is like a city. I mean, Notre Dame, you wonder what the hell? They're not even the same. Can they both be university? Ohio State is like, it's like half of Columbus, for God's sake. I mean, they're all amazingly different. And yours is kind of like, on a bigger level, you're kind of like the DePaul. Where in DePaul, yeah, people have jobs with the city and all kinds of other stuff going on, and yet they're going to school. I mean, it's totally different than what Notre Dame was like. And I think I'd love to go to grad school in a place like where you are.
I'm ready for Thanksgiving break. I can tell you that. No, like I haven't been back to Chicago since, like, May. Like, it's crazy. And it's settled in that, like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen the dog that isn't dead yet in 7 months. She's still alive. So I know the viewers know about that. She's killing it. Literally, she's alive.
Yeah. So you miss your pooch?
I miss the dogs, yeah. But it's okay.
What about your dad?
I mean, like, I don't know if he traveled a lot growing up.
Oh, God. I bet the dogs, they miss you. I'm starting to do some walking.
Well, no, they actually get upset when we leave. Like,
well, yeah.
When my dad, like, gets back from Indiana, like first they'll, like the beagle, especially, she'll, like, run up to him, and she'll be like, oh my gosh, you're back. And then she'll be like, hold up, you were gone for, like, way too many meals. Like, you were gone for 4 meals, if they can count. And then she'll, like, ignore him for a few days, and then she'll eventually, like, it's super weird. And I'm like, I don't, like, when I come back, like, the dogs, like, kind of ignore me. I'm like, hey guys, and then they're like, what are you doing in my house? Yeah,
well, they could be absolutely miffed if you leave. I mean, they're, like, chewing up your stuff and everything. They're social creatures.
No, they're pretty good. Mocha will, like, absolutely destroy our stuff, but Daisy will, like, softly, like, for example, like, our stuffed animals. Like, Mocha will absolutely destroy our stuffed animals. Daisy will, like, grab our stuffed animals and, like, carry them around gently. It's really cute.
Oh, God.
Daisy's the beagle. Mocha's the one that's supposed to be dead.
Supposed to be dead? How does that sound?
He is supposed to be. It's a fact.
Now, is Washington a big dog town? I mean, I've been walking on Saturday mornings early.
Oh, yeah.
And I walk around, and I know I meet the same dogs every Saturday, and it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Whole Foods that I go to, they have a sign out right now that says that emotional support dogs are not allowed in here. They're not ADA accommodated because people are bringing so many dogs and then be like, oh, this is my emotional support dog. Well, there definitely are quite a few dogs. And then, like, whenever I see a French bulldog, a pug, or a beagle, I always stop and pet.
So, oh, yeah. Well, they're in Lincoln Park, the Frenchies are big now.
Frenchies are really big. There's quite... I've seen... When I was in Rome, I saw a lot of Frenchies, actually. But then I see... There's a beagle that lives around here that I sometimes talk to. And then there was a French bulldog that used to live on campus. So I talked to that dog a lot, too. I mean, I pet the dog. I talked to the owner.
Well, I mean, everybody knows the dog's name, and nobody knows the owner's name.
Yeah, I know. But the owner was a professor.
Oh, God.
That'd see him around. Because there's professors that, like, live on campus.
When I had my little guy, Scruff, he could have been the most popular dog in the neighborhood because he was just a little dumb little terrier dog, and everybody loved him. And he loved everybody. So he just,
I mean,
he's dumb as a rack, but...
Everyone loves Daisy. I mean, Daisy likes our neighbors more than she likes us.
So, I mean, when it's all over, are we going to be... Senator Maggie, Rep Maggie, where are you going with all this?
I'm just gonna do political journalism. So
you like?
that's kind of like my direction. I don't honestly like. I was asked by, I hope he's not listening. I was asked by a professor like on Wednesday, like not a day, on Monday. This is what made me have a really long week right now. And he was like, what's your end goal? And I was like, you know, like my end goal is really to just be like happy with whatever I'm doing. Well, I have an idea of what I want to do, but I kind of want to, like, what's it called? Like, see where, like, the tide takes me and those sorts of things, and, like, always have my options open and not be afraid to, like, shift or pivot whenever, and then he went off of me. He was like, well, then, like, we at GW, like, can't help you then, blah, 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 and I just was like, oh my gosh, dude. It was really upsetting at first, but then I'm like, 2 days after that incident, I'm like, okay, whatever.
Hey, you know, you go along and opportunities happen. And you just roll with what you want to do. I mean, I'm still wondering, John, are we still wondering what we want to do when we grow up? I think I am.
Oh yeah, any day I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, so whatever. I mean,
especially like in journalism, that's ever changing. You have to be okay with pivoting versus like, I don't know, because I don't want to say like, oh, I want to do this one very specific thing, and if that one very specific thing doesn't work out, like if like messes with your mentality, versus I just want to be like, oh, I have like this idea of like 3 or 4 things that would like make me happy, you know, like just like being happy is like my end goal.
Well, my advice.
But then that gets worse. That professor was like, well, you could be like happy and homeless, blah 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 blah. I was like, okay, gotta go.
My advice, if you're gonna end up doing a lot of different things in life, is anytime you see, don't be afraid to take a course away from you. In other words, don't be afraid to take a finance course. Don't be afraid to take a marketing course, because someday, somewhere, you're gonna want to know what you learned in that class. I don't think I've ever taken a class, although, I don't know, maybe the philosophy at Notre Dame with that wacky lady. Anyway, it's probably the only course I don't remember anything. You know, I could care less anything above out. You know, there were a couple at the University of Chicago that were so above anybody's pay grade that I've never used those. But
yeah, I'm on track to double major and minor. So double major and double minor. So I'm kind of on like a very specific track right now. I like figured it out.
What are the majors and what are the minors? It's 4 things. How the hell do you do all 4?
Because I found like classes that like double and triple count for stuff.
Ah.
And I've already taken all those classes. And I'm taking that last one right now. So then I just have to take classes that are worth like 1 thing every semester. Anyway, I like figured it all out. It was great. Because I'm like, if my parents are going to be paying like $250,000 for this, like I might as well just like get the most out of it, which I clearly am getting the most out of it. So the first major, like the main major, is journalism and mass communication. Then it's political science is the second major. The first minor is ethics, and then the second minor is disability studies, just because I think it's interesting. And I'm allowed to take classes and do things I just think are interesting.
Wait a minute. How can the same person take political science and ethics?
Math and science. I figured it out.
Since one or... If you have any ethics, can you be in politics?
Mutually exclusive subjects. Right?
Yeah, two different subjects.
No. It's for journalism. Having a good background for ethics. Like, I'm not going to go into politics. I'm going into journalism, covering politics. Those are, like, two different things.
What is the market? This is probably a pretty good question. We have a couple minutes, but Janet, how can I? What is the market for journalism? I mean, I don't think Mike Royko gets a job today. Janet Cass can't even get a job today.
No newspaper. And I think this is one of the big legacies of this election and election cycle, that journalism isn't the same, and probably hasn't been for a long time, but certainly after this election, where the media, not just TV stations, but newspapers, print media generally, has dropped the ball and pretty much lost its following. So I think there'll probably be an explosion of journalists, but not doing the traditional things that journalists did and what they were taught in journalism programs. So I'm not sure how that segues with your experience, Maggie. But
I mean, I have a plan. So this is like my plan. Probably won't work out because you gotta pivot. I'm gonna try after college. I'm gonna try to get like a fellowship at like a big media organization, so like NBC, CNN, Politico, like those have ones where you get to work afterwards. New York Times has one, but you're only there for a year. So there's a lot of like these like entry level journalism programs that like they're super competitive, but just like, I'm not trying to sound cocky, but like with my experience I've been able to gain right now, and like the interviews I'm currently getting for the spring and the summer, I'm feeling very confident that I'm going to be able to like continue to build up my resume. So I'm going to try to work there. But then if I get like kind of fed up with like the way the American media is going, I'll try to switch to like an international bureau. So like a lot of like these bigger papers have bureaus in like London. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the foreign papers do ours. We got a dash here pretty soon.
A lot of like these media companies that are like America, because like in order, I do have to bounce because I have class in 30 minutes.
Right.
But and it's like a 20-minute log.
Well, I have one final question. We had a dude on the show a few times, and one of these days we'll get him back. But he would cover murders, basically, or shootings. He didn't know if the person was dead or not.
I did that over the summer. It was something.
I made a mistake of saying on the air. The guy's name was Joe. Joe, you work for the Tribune? I was, oh no. Tribune doesn't have anybody. Neither. So I get the police band. I go out and I cover it, and I try and sell the story. But they want the story. They just don't want to have somebody on salary to go get it. So he, they knew he would be there or something, and they would pay him. That's what I'm asking you. Is it now when you go to work for, say, a Politico or someplace? Are you supposed to come up with your own stuff, or are they going to pay you?
Yeah, like that's the idea. Like, if you go to like Planet Forward, which is like the climate change solutions based publication I write for, and then I all the stuff on there, like I've pitched. Like, you have to like come up with your own stuff.
Now, do you go and you go cover it and you write it? But are you employed while you're doing this, or do they pay you when you come up with an article?
Yeah, they pay me.
Okay, so that's better than this guy was doing.
Yeah, no, they pay me. Like, I get paid. Like, I'm trying to... Like, I like my student newspaper a lot, but I'm trying to shift away from it just because it's not paid.
I lied. Final question. Is there a Washington equivalent? Here they used to have something. Have you ever heard of the City Desk?
Sorry, what?
Have you ever heard of the City Desk?
I think I have.
All four newspapers in Chicago used to pony up money for 7, 8, 10 people like you to be all night. And if anything happened, you could go out and cover the story, get your name on an article, be it a murder, be it a car accident, whatever, and all the papers would get that story together, and because they all ponied up money for the City Desk. And I'm going to say a decade ago, they disbanded that. So there is no, combined, because all these guys, the Mike Roycos of the world, all cut their teeth in the City Desk. That's how they became reporters. They'd see someone in the police band, they'd get out there, and they'd maybe take a cab or whatever, and they'd write the story and get picked up by 2, 3, 4 papers the next morning. Is there a Washington equivalent of that, or everybody's got their own people?
No, I do have to go.
All right, you take it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, because I have class. Trust me.
Take care,
SP Futures up 2, Nancy Futures up down 16. That was interesting, Jen. Thank you for helping.
Sure.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too. We'll be back tomorrow. We got Tesla up $9. We'll see where that goes. And we got Bitcoin. Everybody likes Tesla and Bitcoin. We'll talk about that next week, Jen. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.